I wanted to say that if at any time during this webinar you have a question for Frosty, then go ahead and if you've dialed in on the phone bridge line, hit star 2 on your phone keypad. Just dial that right in, and we'll see that you'd like your line unmuted, and we can do so that you can speak with him. And if you are online and listening via the Internet, then there's a question box right on that same page. Just type your question in the question box. And if you want to put your first name and maybe the city and state you're from, that way we'll get an idea of where the questions are coming in from. And I want to say that I've known Frosty now, I guess, the better part of a year, and I, you know, had heard of him prior to that through the years, and knew that he had a radio show and that he was a speaker, he was an author. Doing a whole bunch of things, a very incredibly physically fit, performing all kinds of feats even at a young age would be amazing. But you know, he says he's not as young as he used to be. So I think that we're all facing that as the years go on. But at any rate, I there's so much that I could say about Frosty. I know that the main thing we want to do is move right into the webinar, but I can say this, just sum it up. He is very accomplished in a number of areas, and I would say that from the physical to the intellectual level on all respects. He's a very learned, very well-researched, very trained, schooled, educated. He's utilized that in various ways, and he is, as I said, he's probably in the top, I don't know if it'd be like one half of 1% of the world as far as his physical abilities. And I'll let him, you know, share some of the things that he has done in the past. In fact, I'd like to go ahead and bring him in now and ask you, if you would, Frosty, tell us a little bit about yourself so that we'll know you a little bit better and kind of how you came around to be doing the things you are today, if you would.
Well, thank you very much, Earl, and I would like to wish everyone a Merry Christmas and a very Happy New Year for 2010. And I hope that every American across this country, from California to New York and from Michigan to Florida, appreciates the kinds of challenges we have facing this civilization here in the 21st century, and that we all need to pull together as American citizens and as citizens of the earth in order to bring about a viable future for our civilization, but also around the planet. And that's my wish for 2010. And it's an honor to be with you, Earl, and it's an honor to be on this program. And hopefully the discussion brings more questions, but also brings more solutions. And that's the key here. I think all of us know that whether you go back to 1776, and I'm reading a book right now called The Founding Fathers by Joseph Ellis, and he got a Pulitzer Prize for that book, but it shows how they struggled back in 1776, 1780, 1790, and right there into 1800, and the different presidencies, and how this very fragile republic was created. And now we're in another situation where the fragility of this republic is also in question as far as any continuation of it. And so just for a little background for those who are new to the show, I am a graduate of Michigan State University, and I'm also a postgraduate degree in English from Grand Valley State University in Allendale, Michigan, United States Army, second lieutenant, Medical Service Corps, 68 through 71, became a math and science teacher in Colorado in 1973. And in the interim, had the opportunity to live the American dream, took my summers off, and actually traveled around the world on a bicycle, having traveled through almost 100 countries, from the Arctic all the way down to the South Pole. In fact, it actually did travel on a bicycle and camp out in Antarctica. And so I've had some very interesting and amazing experiences in life. For anyone who wants to check out all of those things, you can go to my website, frostywooldridge.com. I'm also a political column writer for quite a few online newspapers. I've also written for the Denver Post, op-eds for the Rocky Mountain News, for the Las Vegas Tribune, quite a few others across the nation. And my main thrust is to really educate the American people and the leaders of this country with the fact that we are on a collision course with our own numbers as far as massive immigration and population disasters that we're facing, not only from the illegal aspect of immigration, but also from the legal aspect of immigration. Both of those together are methodically tearing this country apart. And I'm a man who's already seen what's coming in my travels through China, and India, Bangladesh, South America, Mexico, you name it. And so hopefully I am a voice of reason. I'm also a voice that is willing and able to stand up. My father was a U.S. Marine, 27 years in the Marine Corps, and he told me one thing that has stuck with me all my life. He said, son, if you feel strongly about something enough, you need to stand up and speak out, because there are 1,000 people behind you who are afraid to stand up and speak out. But when you do stand up and speak out, then you will give them the courage to do the same. So that's my stance, and that's my background and my history. And I hope that another thing my father told me when I was a young man, he put his arm around my shoulder when I was facing some great challenge, and he just said to me, son, you can do that. And that was my dad. And so a lot of what my dad is, I've become. And I hope that all of you have the same kinds of strength to really get out there and speak up and stand up, because the United States of America, as far as I'm concerned, is at a crux. It's in the crosshairs of history. It's at a juncture that if we don't solve the problems that we're facing right now, if we don't deal with this, then our civilization could literally go down in ruins and become one of the next civilizations that in the history books that simply failed because the citizens and the leaders did not steer it toward a positive future. So hopefully that'll give you an idea of what I'm all about and what I think and how I'm operating.
Well, certainly, and I appreciate that. And I would say, you know, that the thing that comes through for you always has, Frosty, is that you have a lot of passion, a lot of commitment, and the drive and the will to move that forward. And certainly it's evidenced by the different things that you've accomplished and the causes that you champion. I will say this, is that when we had you on before, I can't even remember when it was. It must have been a couple of months ago or so. We did have a number of questions, and we had people on all sides of the issue, and people, you know, saying this, that, and the other. And I think that one of the main things that came through is that people misunderstood what you were really saying and what you really meant, because part of what you share can touch on some other areas of people that are working towards population control, or who want to control us, use the mechanism of global warming or environmental disasterism, mm-hmm. To whip us into a fear mode, to control us, to absolutely lock us down as far as our liberties go. And, you know, I don't think in anything that I know of what you've said or what you believe or who you are, I don't get that you're for any of those types of things. I think, though, that you're dealing with some facts that you've uncovered in extensive research that you think are rather alarming, and at least you want to sound the call so that we can all figure out what we're going to do about it. How are we going to address these things? If these are the facts, where do we go from here? So maybe you can bring us into that.
Well, thank you. And, Earl, I'm appreciative that, first of all, I always have all sorts of readers out there, and I go on programs, well, he's this, he's that, he's the next thing. The one thing that I am not is any kind of a fearmonger or a hatemonger or an alarmist. What I do is simply bring the facts to the table to create the discussion. I'm not a Chicken Little. I don't think the sky is falling. I'm not an alarmist of any kind. I'm simply a person who has seen a tremendous collision of humanity against the environment in places like China and India and Bangladesh and Mexico. And so, therefore, I have an understanding, whereas most people who have not traveled around the world, who have not seen what I have seen, simply cannot have an appreciation for what we face as a country, as a civilization here in the 21st century. And at no time have I advocated for any kind of such things as controlling population. I've never advocated for abortion. I've never advocated for population control. I've never advocated for anything that would be called extremist. What I have advocated for, obviously, is since the United States is a nation that has been averaging 2.03 children since 1970, that we don't have a population problem in this country. Therefore, we don't suffer the kinds of consequences that they do in China, in India, Bangladesh, Mexico, and all these other countries where they're flooding out of their countries into first world countries. But I am very much aware that the human race is adding 77 million people per year, and they are starving to death. About 18 million of them starve to death every year right now in 2009, that we're headed toward another 3 billion added to the planet by 2050. I'm also very aware that the planet cannot support that huge number of people, and certainly it cannot support it here in the United States at this level of consumption and pollution production and resource usage, because it's not sustainable. What I try to do is help everyone understand that every civilization has a carrying capacity. In other words, how many humans can live within the land? In other words, how many people can live within your house, if you want to take it down to the microcosm? And the fact is, a family of four, two kids and a mom and dad can live in a nice four-bedroom with one spare bedroom. But if all of a sudden they have 10 kids, let's just say if you look at the Duggar family, they just had their 19th child. How can they support, and how can the planet support such a massive population load and have any kind of a future or a sustainable future when we're already facing water shortages in California, in Georgia, in Florida? And so I bring these to the forefront. But the one thing that the United States has enjoyed is, again, a stable population. But the crisis that the American people face is that we're importing about 2.5 million immigrants every year from that 77 million per year. And that is what is creating our population overload. It's exploding our cities. It's exploding our energy usage. It's exploding our water usage. And in the end, it's not sustainable. And you can cry out that the global warming or global climate change is a hoax. Well, then go ahead and do that. But I can share with you this. We are facing water shortages that are real and that are irreversible and unsolvable, and we're on course right now to add 100 million people to this country, 100 million people by 2035. Ladies and gentlemen, that's 26 years from now. And I can tell you from my experience and travel around the world that we will simply put ourselves into the desperate water shortages, water rationing, and degrading of our standard of living and our quality of life, and it simply doesn't have to be. We simply need to, as I've advocated in my latest book, America on the Brink, the next added 100 million Americans, and you can see that on my website, to simply have a moratorium on all immigration into this country, because the line never ends. I mean, there's 77 million more desperately poor human beings on the planet every year. And what we need to do is be able to maintain our viability as a civilization and our sustainability so that we can help them in their own countries and help them to understand and or appreciate their own carrying capacities. And we can help them with, the fact is, birth control. Now, a lot of people say, well, birth control, well, family planning, oh, that's abortion. No, birth control is simply a form of making sure that the human race lives within its boundaries, within its carrying capacity, and that's what we do here in the United States. And that way, we don't have to have, or there won't be any problems, because if you take care of birth control on the front end, you don't have to have the secondary form of birth control, which, by the way, 46 million women choose abortions every year around the planet simply because they weren't given birth control in the forefront of the situation, and therefore they have 46 million abortions every year on the back end of that as a secondary form of birth control. So we have to get realistic about that, and so let's help them in their own countries with food production, with birth control, and then helping them to sustain themselves in their countries so that we can sustain our civilization and the human race can go forward with some kind of viability in the 21st century. Otherwise, the consequences are so ominous and are already playing out. As I said, 18 million deaths per year. 18 million, folks, that's half the size of California right now. Every year, 100 million sharks being killed in our oceans every year, fisheries collapsing, you name it. There's a whole many more other underlying consequences, such as acidification of our oceans, killing of our reefs, collapsing of the fisheries, literally killing the oceans because the plankton is what gives us 80% of our oxygen on this planet. Do you want to keep killing the plankton off with acidified oceans? Do you want to keep killing off another 80 to 100 species every day around the planet right now because of human encroachment? Here in this country, it's about 2,500 plants and animals go extinct every single decade here in the United States right now, and we're nowhere near as overpopulated as China or India or Bangladesh. And then finally, the one point that I would appreciate everyone understanding, it's called an ecological footprint. An ecological footprint for the United States, for Ethiopia, it's about 0.4 acres. In other words, there's hardly any damage done by those humans over there because all they do is walk, they eat, they create human waste, they drink water, and they don't do much. They don't do much damage. But in this country, every added person to this country has to have 12.6 acres of land or wilderness or habitat destroyed to support them. If you add another 100 million people, that means 1.26 billion, B as in boy, billion acres of land must be destroyed in order to support that new 100 million people added to the United States. Well, that means species extinction and cascading species extinction. That means even dirtier air. That means even crowded and more crowded cities. It means gridlock traffic. It means more energy consumption. And in other words, and the water is what's going to be the great arbiter of our situation here in the United States. Wouldn't it make more sense that we stop this massive immigration, as I ask for in my book, a 10-year moratorium, and then after that, 100,000 immigrants per year, only if that allows us to maintain a stable population in our country that's a sustainable population, and we can then go forward. Our children would have a quality of life. They would have the American dream. We could all live with some kind of harmony with nature itself, and then really have a successful civilization in the 21st century. And those are the things that I advocate. And obviously, I hope you're listening that there's no question that I'm just making sense, that I'm making a reasonable understanding of our situation, reasonable solutions, and that we move forward in a positive way so that all of us, and not only us, the humans, but also the natural world has the ability to have its homes and its habitat and its ability to function also. And hopefully that makes sense to everyone listening right now, and so that we can move forward in a positive way using our minds and not going off in emotional tangents that don't get us anywhere. Earl, I hope that makes sense.
It does. It definitely makes sense. Thank you for that. We do have a listener that is in Worcester, Massachusetts, and I just unmuted your line, guest. You want to go ahead and ask a question?
Hi, sure. Actually, I'm in North Conway, New Hampshire. This is a digital line.
Okay.
My name.
I love New Hampshire. I have very dear friends there. Sandy Calhoun.
Yeah, I love what you're talking about. I was going to actually ask you what you thought would be good about the immigration. You actually had answered it, because I'd been preaching for a long time about moratoriums in the United States, because I've been watching over since I got out of the service with a disability from Iraq in 2004. I've been watching the political end of everything at home in my office, and I've been researching and doing all this different research. But, you know, when Bush was back in 2007, I think he allowed 77,000 immigrants from Darfur to be brought into the United States by signing the bill, allowing them to come to the country. And that's just another thing that you're talking about, 100,000 people, you know, minimum, which I think would be probably good. But a president of the United States could wipe that clean in the matter of a whisk of his pencil. And I think something needs to be done about that, you know, about creating either laws or standards within the immigration laws that the president just can't sign off on with his pencil to allow all these people into the country that we can no longer support.
I would agree with you. As a matter of fact, Bush created that 1,000 per month to come in, plus the, what you just, the number that you just said. But he also, in 2009, we've been bringing in 1,900 per month from these refugee programs. And then Barack Obama did another executive order and spent $20 million to bring more from the West Bank. And so what we're doing is injecting ourselves with more and more of the Islamic faith, which is really doing a tremendous amount of damage in Europe right now because it's so incompatible with Western thought, but also with Christianity and the Jewish religion, or any other religion, really, because the prime directive of Islam is to convert or kill all non-believers. And so whether they're a good Islamic person or otherwise, the prime directive of Islam is to simply dominate the host countries. And so I'm writing a 16-part series right now called Muslims in 21st Century America, and you can get it on newswithviews.com or many of the other websites. And it's a serious issue because what we're facing is the multiculturalism and the diversity that we've been championing now for the last 20 years is now starting to turn its ugly head on us, and we're being our language is being displaced, our culture is being displaced, and certainly our religious foundation of Christianity in this country is being displaced, and it's going to get ugly in the years ahead, just as it is very ugly in the United Kingdom.
I wouldn't give us much more than 20 years. I would say
we're going to have tremendous confrontation on the religious realm here within the next decade, because their numbers are now around 8 million Muslims, and they're nothing to fool with. I've traveled throughout of Europe, and they are taking over. And what they do is they just take over the culture and the language, and they displace the host countries, France and England and Holland and Belgium.
Well, the thing with, I also been watching the immigration, you know, and I actually on my desk right over there, I got the thick folder for immigration. I actually downloaded the forms, and it seems like they're not, even when they're allowing immigration into the country, they're not going by the standards of the rules set in place.
Right.
And I've been preaching about using what we have and stop making all these other things allowing people to come in. If you just use our laws, you'd probably restrict quite a few people.
Oh, you would if we would just enforce our laws. But at this point in time, this Congress and certainly the last several presidents have not enforced our immigration laws. And as you all
That's
know,
correct.
Teddy Kennedy is the one that changed those immigration laws in 1965. And I was just a college kid back then. I said, this doesn't make any sense, because we went from 150,000 immigrants from very compatible cultures and religions to all of a sudden, let's take in the whole world. And that's what added 100 million people to this country since 1965 through 2006. And we're well on our way of adding another 100 million. But the problem with this next 100 million is it's simply going to overwhelm our carrying capacity in this country.
Yeah. So do you think a good idea for immigration is maybe putting, like I've also preached around saying that we should, instead of taking our military and throwing a lot of them overseas and all the resources, that we ought to better maintain our borders with the National Guards, because I know, being a National Guard and retired from that I know for a fact that if we did our training on the borders, we'd probably get a lot better training than going to Montana and sitting out and drinking beer.
total agreement. There's no question. We have 700 bases in 120 countries around the world, with 572,000 troops on average that are fiddling around and doing whatever they're doing in those countries and in those bases around the world, costing us well over $1 trillion a year, or whatever the cost is, multiple billions, and yet our southern borders are completely wide open. And I know this because I've been down there for the last 5 years, and we are taking in about 1 million, about 100,000 per month. Illegals are coming in. Mm-hmm. They have been coming in. Sometimes about 3 million per year have come in illegally, according to Time magazine. I actually have the article. And so we're not protecting our country. The war on terror is really farcical, because what's really happening is we're injecting our country with a new kind of terrorism, and it's simply Muslims and Islam being injected as immigrants. We're going to pay for this, and we're going to pay harshly.
Well, the Muslims broadcast right on TV that they don't have to necessarily take us by force. They'll just infiltrate us and have children here and keep multiplying and multiplying until we're gone.
That's exactly right. Well, as a matter of fact, Omar Gaddafi there at Libya said the same thing about Europe. He says we don't have to send bombs or planes.
Mm-hmm.
We're simply slowly and quietly taking over Europe simply by birth rates.
Okay, good.
Yeah, pretty sobering.
I'm going to visit your site because I think you have a lot of good information that needs
thank
to get
you.
Out.
Well, thank you.
And Frosty, you may want to thank you, guest. You may want to make sure that people know the correct spelling of the word Wooldridge so that that they can go to your site. So you might want to give that site out again and maybe spell it out for them if you would.
Okay, yes. Thank you, Earl. The website is www.frostywooldridge.com. That's frostywooldridge.com. And also, along with those websites, I hope that everyone listening in California would go to www.capsweb.org. That's capsweb.org there in California under Dr. Diana Hall. Certainly many of you know that one of the ways to save ourselves and move toward an immigration moratorium is also to join almost a million people, or I think it's over a million people, at numbersusa.com with Roy Beck. A tremendous site, a free pre-faxing of webs or pre-written letters to fax into your reps, and the key here is, fellow Americans, is that we have to create a consciousness shift. You're getting highly educated on this show today because you're starting to learn about what we're facing and the astounding numbers. And the only way to change that is by your actions. So that would create a consciousness shift. You learn about what we're facing. Then a critical mass shift is enough of us that learn about what we're facing, and then we take action through websites like capsweb.org or populationmedia.org or worldpopulationbalance.org or frostywooldridge.com. And then you create what is called a critical mass, which leads to tipping point. Tipping point is when you change history. Susan B. Anthony did it with the suffragettes at the turn of the 1900s. Certainly Dr. Martin Luther King did it back in 1965. You know, if you look across and abroad, you can see Eleanor Roosevelt did some great stuff. John Muir, who's my hero, started the national park systems, which are now worldwide. It goes to show you that any one person or group of persons can change the course of history, whether it's Gandhi or Mandela or Gorbachev or whomever, or even Hitler, which is a terrible example. But the key is, what are you doing? And what are we doing together to preserve and protect our civilization, the United States of America? Because if we sit by and watch this thing happen, within another 10 or 20 years, there will be another 10 or 15 million more Muslims in this country. Not only will it be a tremendous religious conflict, and it's going to be an ecological conflict as we have less and less for more and more people. So I hope you do take action and you become part of the action instead of just complaining and saying, oh, you can't do anything. You can do something. This is a cause and effect world. Everything you do or you don't do will definitely make a difference.
Okay. Well, we have a question from Pete in Greeley. That's probably Greeley, Colorado, but who knows. I would like to know what we are going to do when government does not respond again to what the people want. I suggest we pray for a quick return of the Lord. Well, it wasn't really a question, but anyway, I don't know if you have any comment in regards to that.
You know, the thing is, my father used to tell me, God helps those who help themselves. The one thing that we all have the ability to do is take action. You can't sit around hoping somebody else is going to do it. You can't sit around. As a matter of fact, I've done the revolutionary thing just this month in Golden, Colorado, where I live. I went down to the city council. We're facing another 5 million people added to the state of Colorado within the next 40 years, okay? 5 million. We can't afford to have 5 million here. We don't have enough water right now. Our gridlock traffic is horrible. The brown cloud is beyond toxic. It's a mess here in Colorado, and we just hit 5.1 million this year. And when I first came to Colorado 40 years ago, we had 1.5 million people in Colorado. There was no such thing as air pollution, no traffic, no nothing. It was just a wonderful place. Well, now it's a giant mess here in Denver. And now we're going to pile another 5 million into Colorado. And so I went down, and everybody hates it. And yet nobody wants to do anything about it. And it's always growth, but don't deal with the consequences. Growth, let's stop having gridlock traffic, but don't stop growth. Let's clean up the air, but don't stop growth. Let's lower the energy cost, but let's don't stop growth. Well, growth is a paradigm of the 20th century. It can no longer function in the 21st century. We really have to come to terms with that. So I went down to the city council at Golden, and I said, let's create, because of all these problems, let's create a Golden stabilized population policy. Just to get, and I mean the whole room just lit up, and the cameras lit up, and oh my gosh, what's this guy saying? And all I said was, we need to stop building new houses, building more businesses, and bring to Golden, Colorado, a stable population to live within the carrying capacity of Golden, Colorado, whether it's water or resources or just quality of life. And who in the heck thinks it's a lot of fun to live in New York City? You have to be out of your mind to think that New York City is a quality place to live, or a place like Los Angeles or now Houston or now Dallas or even Chicago. I know, because I've traveled through those cities, I've bicycled through those cities, and it's a nightmare. Crime, drugs, air pollution, I mean filth and trash and garbage and drugs, you name it, the big cities are a nightmare. Why would you want to create that in your own state or your own city or your own area? And of course, the answer is you don't. And so I'm just creating the discussion, and I'm going to go back next month and say, and here's why. And hopefully we start this discussion now, rather than wait for another 26 years from now when we're in the middle of the what I call a human Katrina. You know, do you sit there and you see the human Katrina? Well, Hurricane Katrina, would you sit there and they tell you 200-mile-an-hour winds are coming in? Do you just stand there on the beach and wait for them? No, you take proactive action. You do something to try to save yourself. And so this is what I'm trying to do, and I hope that I marshal more and more millions of Americans to say, hey, we don't need and we cannot tolerate, we cannot afford and we cannot sustain more and more immigration into this country. We need to stop it, and we need to stop it now. We need a moratorium on all immigration into our country so that we have a future instead of a very bleak crisis facing us, much like this already being manifested across the rest of the globe.
Absolutely. I hear you. We have another guest that, in fact, it may be the same person that was just a minute ago. I've just unmuted your line, guest.
Yeah, I think I am the same person. I was just going to ask Frosty about how many out in his area, how many immigrants do you see out there?
Well, in Denver, Colorado right now, or in all of Colorado, the estimates have run somewhere between 300,000 and 500,000. They're costing the state of Colorado about $1.1 billion per year in an ancillary cost, about $925 million for just educational costs. And, of course, those aren't working too well because we have about a 60% dropout flunkout rate out of our high schools in the Denver area alone. They're costing us about $86 million, I think it is, in medical costs and anchor babies, and another $38 million for incarceration costs, and that doesn't include the free lunches and free breakfasts. One of the things that most Americans don't understand what we're creating in this country is an enclaved, or if you will, a new entrenched poverty class. You have to understand that Mexico is a culture that does not care for education. It doesn't care for taking care of its environment. And that's now coming into our country. And so the more you import all this poverty and the culture of poverty into this country, we're actually creating a massive overload. And how can I share that with you? We already have right now 15 million Americans who are unemployed. That's 15 million Americans. That's you and me, folks. But we also have 35 million Americans subsisting on food stamps. And yet, every 30 days, we import around 200,000 to 240,000 immigrants into this country. How can that be good? And, of course, the answer is it's not good. It's absolutely deleterious. It's very destructive of our own citizens because they displace our own citizens, and we can't continue that. It's going to end very badly for not only our own citizens, but for the immigrants themselves as we all sink into this quagmire, this huge consequence of too many people, too much poverty, too much illiteracy. Oh, and I would say one thing. What is the one factor that really delineates all third world countries and their poverty. What's the one thing that makes up all of those countries? And I can tell you what it is. I've traveled through almost 100 of them. Illiteracy. They're multiplying so fast. 77 million added every year to all these third world countries. And the one thing that they just can't even catch up to is the illiteracy. And so the more illiteracy there is, the more poverty there is, the more children there are, and then the more misery, and it's called the human misery index. And so we're just simply importing it into our country. We can't do it. We'll never catch up to it if we continue on this immigration Titanic, if you will. And that's why it's so horrible what we're doing to ourselves.
Well, I know out in Arizona, in Frisbee, Arizona, I think in 2004, yep. 2005, that the hospitals out there gave up their OBGY for services for women because they couldn't afford anymore, because there was so many immigrants coming to the hospital with babies and getting free service and everything else, and just grabbing it away from actual natural Americans that live here.
86 of them collapsed, actually. 86 hospitals and ER wards collapsed in Arizona and in California.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, that's a shame. I mean, we have a real problem here, and it's terrible.
It is. It's more than terrible. It's highly destructive of the American way of life, and it's going to get worse if we continue on this path. That's why it is imperative that we make this the number one issue in 2010. It is off the screen right now. It's not talked about. It was big in 2006 when I did the 21st Century Paul Revere ride through 48 states and 20,000 miles on the motorcycles. It was up to the forefront in 2007. It started simmering in 2008, and it's not even on the screens in 2009, and yet it is like a cancer. It's starting to grow. There's 20 million of these illegal aliens in this country. The importation of 1.2 million more immigrants every year to as high as 1.5 million. This is a cancer. It's subtle, but it's starting to affect every aspect of our country, our schools, our culture, our language, and all of our systems. And it's very destructive. And it's going to get even more destructive.
I think if the government's not careful, guys, I'm a patriot, and I went to the patriot thing in Washington D.C., and I've been going to these different patriot Tea Party things, and becoming more active. Yeah, and I dress up as George Washington, and I preach about the Constitution and how we need to get back to the basics and the fundamentals of our founding fathers and these different things. But they just, I don't know how. I say it all the time, and I have a lot of people talking, and when you guys were talking before about, for one person that stands up, there's about 1,000 behind you that won't. That's true, as I've seen it. I mean, people talk in the background about they'd like to do things, and I said, well, I'll speak for you as long as you back me. And they keep it just keeps going on and on. But the thing is that we, even in North Conway, New Hampshire, the immigrants that are coming here, they're coming from Russia, they're coming from Bulgaria, Romania, and they're being imported by the hotels.
Right. Again, and what we're creating is a slave class, but unfortunately, this 21st century slave class is going to cost us our civilization. Because it will cost us our civilization, because what you're losing is you got 14 million Americans, 14 million American human beings, citizens of this country, are unemployed right now. Mm-hmm. And 35 million American citizens are living on food stamps. And yet we keep importing all of this cheap, essentially slave labor of the 21st century, so a few people can be very, very rich. Capitalism has been a wonderful aspect, but it's when you get uncontrolled and corrupted capitalism, it is a dangerous thing that's happening to us, and you're seeing the results of it. We've watched our jobs go insourcing and offshoring and outsourcing, and that's what capitalists have been doing. So a few of them are making multi-millions of dollars, whether it's Bill Gates, who has $54 billion, or any of these other, Madoff or Warren Buffett. The rest of us are paying for this, because each year we taxpayers pay out $346 billion per year across 15 federal agencies to support all of these immigrants, both legal and illegal. Ladies and gentlemen, that is a no-win and a lose-lose for you and me average American citizens. It can't continue, because if it does, you're going to see our entire system collapse upon itself, or you're going to see all of us start suffering in ways that no one appreciates in this country. But I can tell you, having traveled throughout the third world, it gets to be really ugly out there when you don't have food, you don't have a job, the crime is everywhere, ghettos grow, entrenched poverty becomes the mainstream. It literally is a recipe for destroying this civilization, and we're well on our way right now because of those kinds of people up there in Congress.
Well, thank you.
Yes, did you have another question?
No, I was. I don't want to take up all his time. He's got a lot of good info to put out.
All right. Thank you.
That. You know, one of the things I just want to touch on that you were saying before, Frosty, that a lot of times people will misunderstand. I think what you were describing, rather than being a form of capitalism, is what I call corporatism.
Yeah.
And it's really where there's a collusion between certain corporate entities and government, where the government will look the other way in certain instances, or they'll grant them special privilege, or they'll give them monies through certain things that are put in place. They are given every opportunity in the world, and the enforcement of certain things that others have to abide by are not put in place for them or not enforced for them. So it really becomes to where you have corporatism, and it's not free enterprise, it's not free market, it's not capitalism at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's a whole different animal, and that gets into what, whether you call it corporatism, statism, or whatnot, but it's certainly not what proponents of liberty are seeking in any way, shape, or form. It's a total perversion of it, because it pretends to be capitalistic, and yet it's anything but.
It's a corruption.
Corruption. Total corruption.
It's a corruption of the dignity and the integrity of capitalism. And that's the great tragedy, and you're seeing it happen right now. You're seeing it in the Iraq War and the Iran War, or the Iraq War and the Afghanistan War. You're seeing the big buy-offs and the payoffs. You've seen a little bit of it with whether it was Jefferson down there in Louisiana, the House Rep who took how many millions of dollars, or Duke Cunningham out in California who's now sitting in jail for 8 years. You're seeing the corruption of corporatism, and you're seeing a lack of personal accountability and personal responsibility. And we're going to see more of that because, again, when you here in Colorado, we've had almost 200 bank robberies here in the state of Colorado. We had like 9 just last weekend or this week. It's unbelievable. But what you're seeing is you were seeing trash being thrown all over the West here. People go out and just dump their trash all over Utah right now, and they just we're seeing a loss of a sense of personal accountability and personal responsibility that was never a part of this country until the last 20, 30 years. And it's because, again, illiteracy, lack of responsibility, lack of parenting, and of course, lack of jobs and hopelessness. And then yet some of these people at the top making millions, if not billions of dollars, and then we're paying the freight on this thing, and you're going to see worse and worse outcomes of this as we go along if we don't stop it.
We can certainly see we need some definite solutions. I want to remind everyone that we're speaking with Frosty Wooldridge, and he is discussing all kinds of issues around the problems we're facing today, and very specifically related to immigration in all of its forms. And I want to invite people to join in on the discussion either on the phone line or by the internet. If you are on the phone line, you can dial *2 on your phone keypad, and then we'll unmute the line as we did for the guest that's already participated in that. If you're online, just go ahead and type your question into the question box on that page and submit it to us, and we'll make sure that question gets answered by Frosty. Let's see. We do have a couple of more questions that came in via the internet. We have Judy Kiner in Louisville, Kentucky. Says, I got in late and would like to hear this all, please. Is there a way you will have it available in its entirety? Yes, I can answer that. We'll be posting this, Judy and the others here. We'll be posting this shortly after we complete the webinar today in its entirety, because it is being recorded. And it will be posted there for indefinitely. I mean, it's going to be there and for a long time. You'll find it at republicmagazine.com/webinar. You'll also find Frosty's previous webinar with us there. You have to go back a little ways to find it, as well as numerous other webinars that I think you'll find very interesting. We have Phil in London, and that is London, England, believe it or not. Phil participates a lot. We get questions and comments from him. He says, "Hi, George and Frosty." I guess he means George is the publisher. I'm Earl. Over here in little old England, exactly the same has occurred. Open border policies have led to a huge demand on resources. The biggest Islamic temple in the world is being built in London. If you complain, you're labeled as a racist. What is the power behind this that can cause such disruption? Keep up the good work. Happy New Year. By the way, this government has just, this government has just housed an Afghan family in a London house worth $5 million USD at taxpayers' expense. Any comments, Frosty?
Yes. I've traveled throughout Europe. I've watched how Islam has displaced the French, their language, their culture, and at some point, France will no longer be France. It'll be France Arabia. And in the United Kingdom right now, there are two different countries. In London, England, there are the Muslims, and there are the British, and they are very separated. There is no multiculturalism. There's certainly no diversity. They simply stay away from each other, and they have what I would say a tendentious tolerance of each other. And the real great crisis for the United Kingdom is it was once totally British, and now it has literally turned itself inside out, and it's literally going to be overwhelmed because the birth rate for the average European right now is around 1.4 children. Some, I think, down as low as 1.3 children in Italy. Well, the birth rate for the European Muslim is 8.1 kids per woman. And so you can see the final analysis by 2050 or 40 years from now, Holland will no longer be Holland. It is going to become literally a Muslim colony. And the Dutch are going to be pretty much run out of their own country. Same thing for Belgium already that has been happening. Norway is on the blocks. So is Sweden. I get letters from those countries, from the people, just like the one you just heard from the United Kingdom. But United Kingdom right now is on course not only to be completely Islamicized, if you will, but it's also going to it's on course to add about 11 million more people. Well, get this. It already has 62 million people in the United Kingdom right now in a landmass the size of Oregon. Okay, so anybody here, can you imagine having 62 million people in the state of Oregon? Well, guess what? They're on a course to add another 11 million. So not only do they have 62 million, but they're going to go to 73 million in a landmass the size of Oregon. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you understand that at some point the bubble's going to pop. There's not going to be enough energy. There won't be enough wood. There won't be enough food. There won't be enough of anything. And I just read a very powerful book by Chris Steiner from Forbes magazine. It's called $20 per gallon. Whether you like it or not, gasoline and oil in this century is going to be harder to find and harder to get to, and it's going to be going up to $20 per gallon. And so all of this great travel and all of the great energy and all the great cheap food we've had in the past is simply going to change. And it's going to get a little bit dicey for us to feed ourselves, to keep our homes warm, and all of it, again, as I said, because of massive population growth of the human race, and it's now coming to really a front-and-center collision with its own numbers, and we are really bashing up against the energy resources, the water resources, and the ability to feed ourselves. The 21st century is going to be one heck of a challenge for the human race, not only here in this country, but around the world, and the United Kingdom is really in the crosshairs of its own destiny. And as far as I can see, the United Kingdom is committing national suicide along with France and Belgium and certainly Norway and Sweden, but even Austria and certainly Germany the same. And I see great conflict, ethnic conflict in those countries when it gets down to water and food and energy. It's going to be really, unfortunately, an unfortunate future for many, many people in those countries.
Certainly. that, Phil. We always appreciate getting international input and perspectives, and you're certainly doing some good work there. You've been on top of so many issues. We've got Denise in Benton, Kentucky, and she has in parentheses 912 project. Must mean that she's involved with that. How do we as individuals help in this effort, and can you get on any of the major cable news channels like Fox and get this information to the mass of people that can help, like the Tea Party movement?
Thank you for that question, and I can tell you this. I have, with all of my credentials, qualifications, education, world travel experiences, and the books that I've written and the columns that I write, it is almost impossible. I have tried for the last 5 years to get on Charlie Rose, Good Morning America, Katie Couric, Diane Sawyer, 60 Minutes. I've written all of the directors and all the producers of 60 Minutes. I've written Larry King Live. I've written Nightline, Primetime, Fox, CNN. I've sent them all a DVD of my program, The Coming Population Crisis in America and What You Can Do About It, which I have on a DVD, and I get absolutely nothing in return or responses. I've sent letters of introduction to the top 100 newspapers in this country. Zero response. I've tried literally the top 150 radio shows. I've been on some of them, but for the most part, this government and our governors and our senators and our House reps will avoid any conversation, any confrontation of any kind when it comes to immigration or population. In fact, my brother, who lives in Washington, D.C. and works in the halls of Congress, said that none of the senators or the House reps today would issue or submit a bill to reduce immigration down to 100,000 per year. They won't touch it, and they won't discuss it. And it's almost like we're sitting here like a blind man walking over a cliff just because we don't have anything else, no other path, let's choose nothing else. And it's been very frustrating because I am extremely articulate on this entire issue. It's the most profound issue facing America in the 21st century, and yet it is the most ignored issue in the United States. And again, I'll keep trying to get on Charlie Rose. I'll keep trying to get on Katie Couric. I would love to debate anyone and ask them name. And I asked it because I've been on when I was in the 26 or the 21st Century Paul Revere ride. I was on 96 television interviews locally, and the last thing I asked every one of them, because of course they came with, oh, he's a xenophobe. He called me every kind of name in the book. I said, how about calling me somebody that's a rational thinking person, somebody who's a realist, somebody who has the facts in order? And I said, name one advantage of adding 100 million people to the United States within the next 30 years. And the crews went away saying, my God, he's got a heck of a point there. But ladies and gentlemen, it's not just 100 million that we're going to add. The predictions for the United States right now, and it just put out by one of the big U.S. Census Bureau, we're on our way to growing within the lifetime of a child born today from 309 million as of the December of 2009. We're going to hit 668 million people somewhere around 2070, 2080. Earl, that number is what makes living in the misery of China or Bangladesh or India or Mexico City so horrible that these people flee those countries just for their lives. But guess what? We're becoming the same kind of civilization that all those people are fleeing. And that is the greatest tragedy that we're facing here in the 21st century. That's why it's imperative that we change it. So I hope everybody starts writing into Fox News and Britt Hume and Shepard Smith and Wolf Blitzer and say, you have got to interview a guy named Frosty Wooldridge who's bicycled all over the planet. He has seen what's coming. He's very rational. He knows he has some answers to what we face, and we need to get this issue to the forefront. I would happily invite all of you to start becoming the army of journalists to just tell those stations. In fact, email me at my place, and I'll put you on my list. And I give my little press corps, what I call it, about from 40 different states. I give them the same exact homework to do every month. And so, yeah, hopefully. And I also have 26 other experts that whether it's Dr. Albert Bartlett or Governor Lamb of Colorado or Dr. Diana Hull or Jack Alpert, the PhD, I've got men and women from all areas that are so in tune with this. Bill Ryerson of PopulationMedia.org, David Ryer, David Paxson of World Population Balance. These are just regular folks like you and me, and they're on the forefront of this thing. They all need to be interviewed, all 26 of them, because we need to get this to the forefront of America, or otherwise we're simply going to become victims of this massive immigration population overload.
Yes. Well, you know, Denise in Benton, Kentucky also asked, have you tried to contact any of the Tea Party organizations?
Yes, I have, and I've been a part of the Tea Party organizations. And again, this thing is so far off the radar screen, and the reason for that is because Americans have always just accepted that they've got all the water they needed, they've got all the energy they need, they have all the space they need. What they don't understand is it's not about space. It's about resources because, you know, I mean, I've cycled around the entire of Australia, which is almost the same size as the 48 contiguous states, and it's 96% desert. That's why right now Australia it doesn't have the carrying capacity to even sustain the 21 million that they have right now. They're in deep trouble. And they're fighting. They may be the first country that closes down all immigration, and I hope so, because if you don't, then these third world countries will keep still having this 77 million added per year, and they'll just use all of us as their excess exhaust place to save themselves from ultimate collapse. But in the end, we're all going to collapse from this thing, and that's why immigration solves nothing for anybody, and it creates even greater problems.
Okay. I just want to remind everybody again, we're speaking with Foster Woolridge, and if you would like to, and we invite you to become a part of this conversation, if you're online, just type into the question box there, whatever your question is, your city and state, and submit that to us, and we'll make sure the question is asked, as we've been doing. And if you're on the phone line, you can just dial *2 on your phone keypad, and we'll unmute your line, and you can speak with Frosty. I know we're close to the hour point now, and I don't know. Do you have a few more minutes, Frosty, if we have a couple more questions?
Yes, I certainly do. And also, you know, I want you all to appreciate that there is hope and that we do have an advantage of the Internet. We have an advantage of web seminars like this one to really move this issue. And, of course, numbersusa.com, you join a million more Americans that are as concerned as you are. But they're actually over in Australia, a guy named Mark O'Connor and William Lyons wrote a book almost exactly like mine, with many of the same quotes and comments at the head of each chapter. And so it's called Overloading Australia. And so I've been keeping in great contact with them. I go to the population media conferences in Washington, D.C. in the fall. There's 100 top experts around the world there last year. The key is you all can do the same thing. Hook up with PopulationMedia.org and hook up with WorldPopulationBalance.org and CapsWeb.org and, of course, NumbersUSA. There's also others on my website. And the key is the more of us that get involved, then the more chance we have of really saving our civilization and moving it into the 21st century in a viable and sustainable way. That's the key. Your actions, your input, your involvement.
Great. We do have a question from, let me see, we've got Dan Bacon in North Conway, and Dan says, Frosty, maybe they are all self-serving, call Glenn Beck. Oh, yeah, I think he's talking about the media that you were naming that you contacted. Have you tried Glenn Beck?
You know, I've tried to get on Glenn Beck for the last 5-6 years now. I've sent him my materials. I've sent him the questions and answers that he could ask me if he had me on the show, and I have never received a response from Glenn Beck. I don't know what it is or why. The same thing has happened with all the 60 Minutes crew. The same thing has happened with Katie Couric, Diane Sawyer, certainly Matt Lauer. I've sent them. I said, look, if you don't like what I'm talking about, or you're not sure of my credentials or whatever, here's 26 other top experts with PhDs. Here's a Governor Lamb of Colorado that would go on with me as a politician, and I would come on as the bicycler of the world and so forth. But whatever it is, I because all of our kids are going to be involved with this thing, whether it's Britt Hume's kids or Matt Lauer's kids or Katie Couric's kids, And no one's going to escape this thing. And yet the denial is unbelievable at the highest levels in this country. Yes, I've tried every outlet. I've written personal letters. I've sent the DVD videos. I've sent Roy Beck's Immigration by the Numbers, which is 14-minute DVD video that is just astounding in its grasp of what we face. And yet the media on purpose ignores any of this and all of this, and it's going to continue to ignore it unless all of us citizens push it to the forefront. That's why it's really up to all of us and each one of you to start pushing this issue, the immigration population issue, to the forefront here in the early part of the 21st century, because I can tell you this, if we let it go another 10 years, we'll have another 33 million people in this country. If you go another 20 years from now, we'll have 66 to 70 million more people in this country. And then within 26 years, the predictions are, and you can go to all of you can go to Pew Report, you can go to the Fogel Martin Report, we'll hit 100 million or 400 million by 2035, and by 2050, 438 million. Those are the figures. Those are the lowest figures that we're facing. So by all means, think of your children. Think of all of our states. Think of our energy, water, and food, and air. And this is the issue of the 21st century, and it's the most ignored issue of the 21st century.
Yes. James Arft in Cape Coral, Florida, says immigration control is one facet of the overall problem. The overall problem is the acceptance of the idea of internationalism, globalism, by establishment politicians. Globalism favors free flow of materials, goods, and people.
That's all right and good, but again, how would anybody in this country like to see that 77 million people that are added to the planet start free flowing into the United States every year? Because I can tell you, they are desperate, they are poor, they are illiterate, they are really, unfortunately, the third world. And so I can tell you this, globalism in the final analysis, when the fuel starts going up to $10, $12, $14, $16, and $20 per gallon, we're not going to be able to inhale $700 billion worth of junk from China every year, because globalism, you won't be able to afford it. And so on many, many fronts, I can tell you, globalism is not going to succeed. It's going to fail. We're going to see countries constrict, and we're going to get down to really basically trying to feed ourselves, trying to clothe ourselves, trying to warm ourselves in our homes around the globe. Globalism is simply not going to survive in the 21st century. What's going to happen is we're all going to just try to have enough food to eat, have enough shelter, and have enough community to sustain ourselves as human beings in some kind of dignity. That's what we're really facing.
You know, I think one of the things that come up for the folks that are readers of Republic Magazine and that listen to webinars like this one is that we're very sensitive, all of us, about issues that can come up, and then those people who are power hungry, who would like to either cash in on it financially and or power wise to gain more and more power, to convince us to give up our liberties, to sacrifice everything that we enjoy or that's dear to us, that gives us the joy in life, so that they can have greater and greater control. And it's the old trick called problem, reaction, solution. These people see a problem. They know what the reaction is going to be. In fact, they'll even try to fuel that reaction because they have a solution in mind, which basically is to line their pockets and to have for them to have more power over other people. And that's what our people are very sensitive about. If they think an issue is taking them in that direction, if they think something is trying to light a fire under them to give up those freedoms, they're going to be in up in arms about it. And, you know, you can't blame them. You really can't, because there are a lot of shysters that, for their own good, want to pull one on us to take our freedoms and to take our money. It's happened throughout history. So I think that's where some of the sensitivity comes up. And, of course, globalism is another one of those tricks. The globalists that want to create a world government, and, you know, basically have it it's one big plantation, one global plantation, with them being the masters at the top. And that's been going on for a while. But anyway, that's a whole other issue.
Well, but it's appreciated. And in the final analysis, all government is local. I go to my city councils. I vote locally. I engage locally because this is my community. And in the end, world government just cannot and will not work. It is a method of the rich and the elite and the powerful. But in the final analysis, it's up to each one of us to engage in government in our own areas and in our own communities. Personally, I'm just a regular American citizen. I've enjoyed the American dream. I've worked hard to attain and get what I got, and I'm so appreciative, and I have so much gratitude. And that's why, I mean, if I could right now, I'd love to just go back into my office and simply write the next five books. I'm a novelist, and I'm a nonfiction adventure book writer. I wish I wasn't spending 65 hours a week writing columns to enlighten and educate the American citizenry. I wish they were already enlightened. I wish that the Congress was already shut the borders down and protected our country. And I wish that our own Congress stopped the offshoring and the outsourcing and the insourcing of jobs. And I wish that we didn't have 35 million Americans that are subsisting on food stamps and 14 to 15 million Americans that are unemployed. But I feel, because of my father and a sense of duty to my country and to my culture and to my civilization, I'm 63 years old. I'm taking the last part of my life, instead of fulfilling myself, writing my books, and just being a quiet private person, I'm sticking my nose out there to make a difference. And I think if you look back in history, whether it was John Muir or Thomas Jefferson or George Washington or Susan B. Anthony or any of those greats of the past, they did it because it was important to them at the time. And I think each and every one of you could also become a John Muir and certainly a Susan B. Anthony or a Dr. Martin Luther King or whomever your hero is, so that you made a difference in your lifetime, so that that difference will be felt not only 10 years from now, but 100 years from now, and that they look back and they'll say, I'm so proud of my parents because they got involved back in 2010 and changed the course of history by their actions. And that's the goal here. We have a responsibility to future generations, and I hope each and every one of you takes it as serious as I do, because if you don't, then this thing's going to roll over us, and we're going to see this civilization in ultimate calamity on so many fronts that, as I've said in my book, it will become irreversible and unsolvable. We'll simply have to live in the misery of it all.
Yeah, absolutely. There's Denise with Benton, in Benton, Kentucky, shares a couple of websites. She says, check them out. I'll go ahead and give them out. It's www.nationallibertyparty.org. And then she gives another one, which is nationallibertyunitysummit.org. That's a long one. That's nationallibertyunitysummit.org. NationalLibertyParty.org. So I don't know. I have to check those out. I can't say yay or nay anything about them because this is the first time I've been made aware of them. So who knows what they are? But we'll see. Maybe they relate to what we've been talking about. I would say, Frosty, as far as the media goes, I think the media really responds to demand. If they think there's enough demand from people, if they're hearing a lot from their listenership, viewership, readership, they kind of sit up and start taking notice of it. One of the things that can happen is they can have a knee-jerk reaction to something when certain issues come up. They can immediately go into, oh, some racist, oh, some this, some that, whatever it is, we're not going to have that on the show. We're not going to have hate stuff on here. And they're not even really hearing the message. But if enough people create a demand for it, they'll take a second look and say, well, maybe there's a way we can cover this. Maybe it's not what I thought it was initially. So, you know, with that, I would say that, you might invite people to contact you with ideas, share ideas so that we can know how to be more effective at the things we're trying to do. If you would, Frosty, give out your contact information again. I don't know if you have any number they can call, but certainly maybe there's an email that they can write you at, to share information with you.
Oh, by all means. Well, my website has all the things you need. You can contact me at any time. My private email is frostyw@juno.com, or you can go to my website, and there's a tab in there, and it just I get letters from all over the world. I answer all of them. I certainly show you how to take action on a personal level, on a state level, on a national level, even an international level. Everyone has a certain passion in life, and I certainly hope. When I just spoke to the University of Colorado last month, I had a huge audience, and it was videotaped. And the video, of course, can really educate your whole school, or your whole church, or your whole your political club. I don't care if it's Democrat or Republican or Libertarian. The key is that this is facing us all. None of us are going to get out of this thing scot-free, or our children are going to be facing it. And so we either do something to change the course of history, or the course of history is going to run over us like a steamroller. And again, my website is frostywooldridge.com, frostywooldridge.com. Again, if you can write in and call in and phone in to all of the Charlie Rose show, I guarantee you all I got to do is get on Charlie Rose one time, and I'll guarantee you I'll light up the lines, because what I'm talking about is so far ahead of what most Americans understand that they can't even conceive of it. It's not in their consciousness. That's why this issue is being so ignored on so many levels. And Errol, as you just said, the rich are just, the rich in all of the countries of poverty, whether it's in Bolivia or whether it's in Mexico, they live in gated communities. They live above all of the misery and the trash and the filth and the garbage and all the consequences. But when this thing manifests in the United States, I don't care what your race or your creed or your color is, no one is going to escape what is headed toward the United States of America, as it's already manifested in so many other countries, and that is the crisis of overpopulation, and it's all being created because of mass immigration into this country. We have a choice. We must make the choice, and we must make enough noise so that our form of government will respond to it. And that's the key. We must create the critical mass and then the tipping point. And that's why this web seminar is so important. And probably everything you've heard on this thing today for the last hour makes sense. It comes from a voice of reason. And, you know, and I'll just quote this last piece I did. The Saylor, Steve Saylor, wrote this. It would be intriguing to ask the climate change folks what they think about America's population swelling to 668 million. But, of course, they wouldn't answer. They just sputter and call you names. And what are those names? Fearmonger, hatemonger, racist, xenophobe, bigoted, nativist, etc. The media will not allow such names as realist, ecologist, population expert, pragmatist, or rationalist. Or, you know, in the end, I just use plain old common sense. And so the key here is that you all have the courage to stand up and speak out in every state in the union. Talk to your senator. I'm in the process right now, Earl, of calling all 535 congressmen in our U.S. Congress. I'm about 140 of them in right now, and I give them a 10-minute spiel. I said, if you give this amnesty, if you keep this immigration rate going, we're going to have another 100 million people in this country in less than 26 years. What are you going to do about the water crises? And I give them a little spiel, and they say, gee, I never thought about that. That's right. No one's thinking about this. Well, I hope everyone listening today is now thinking about it big time, and I hope all of you tell 100 other people, and that we have another 500,000 people join numbersusa.com in the coming week or so, or month or whatever, and so that we create this massive collective of Americans who care about the future, and that's the goal, all of us caring about the future, caring about our children.
Great. Well, you know, I know you have that latest book. Could you give us the name of it and how people can connect with it?
Yes. The latest book is America on the Brink, The Next Added 100 Million Americans. And you can obtain a copy by going, you can call in 1-888-280-7715. That's 1-888-280-7715, or you can go to my website, frostywooldridge.com, and you'll see a picture of the book. It shows immigrants pouring over and literally drowning the Statue of Liberty. And again, as I said, we could take in 10 million immigrants a year. We could take in the 18 million that starve to death every year. There would still be another 77 million added to the planet every year. There's no end to the line. So either we choose to remain a solvent and sustainable society and civilization, or I guarantee you, all of us are going to sink just like everybody on the Titanic. And the Titanic, I don't care if you were first class, second class, third class, steerage, which is third class, or you were shoveling coal into the boilers, when the Titanic went down, everybody went down with it and became a victim and or a survivor. And that's where we're headed right now with our civilization. And yet the captain, which is now Barack Obama, in 2007, not only voted to give an amnesty to all the illegal aliens in our country, numbering over 20 million, he also voted to double legal immigration to 2.5 million per year. Ladies and gentlemen, does that make any sense at all? And, of course, the answer is it makes no sense whatsoever, and it is just a recipe for destroying our civilization.
Well, I really appreciate what you've shared today, and no matter, you know, how people feel about it, it certainly gives you a lot of fuel for thought and analyzation. And I would just challenge everybody, you know, do your own research. Don't believe what Frosty says or I say or anybody says, but do convince yourself of whatever it is that you're going to be convinced of by doing some research and looking at real information, facts, and figures, and decide, okay, this is how I feel about it. If you would, Frosty, what I want to do is just, in just a moment, if there's anything that you had wanted to mention in the webinar and didn't, or just a final passing thought, then certainly this will be the time for that. I wanted to say that we will have a webinar tomorrow. We're actually going to have several people with the Republic of Texas, which I think when you hear what they have to say, it's going to be amazing to a lot of people. One of the big things there, the question is, was the Republic of Texas, was Texas ever actually legally and officially annexed to the United States? Did it become a part of the United States? And I think the answer is going to amaze you, and they're going to have a lot of information, discussion, and you can certainly talk with them, dialogue with them, and find out more about what's going on with that. And it also will have a lot of implications on other states that have the same situation. So very interesting. So I invite you to take part in that. We're not going to take a break. We're going to keep going with the webinars. And next week we'll have also an equally powerful lineup of webinar guests. And look for the recording of this webinar to be posted shortly after this at republicmagazine.com/webinar. And I really thank everybody for being a part of this webinar today. And Frosty, if you would, if there's something that you'd like to close with, that would be great.
Well, thank you, Earl. You know, I care deeply about humanity. I care deeply about all of us as human beings. I care about the animal world and our environment. I care about this planet. And as I said, and you'll see it right on my website, overpopulation will become the single greatest issue facing humanity in the 21st century. And it's up to us, the ones that understand, that know, have become knowledgeable, and that care, to make the difference. And you can make a difference. And I've given you tremendous information today. And check it all out. I mean, I don't make this stuff up. I've already seen it in the countries that I've traveled through on my bicycle. I've seen it at 12 miles per hour. I've seen the human misery. I've seen dead people and starving and dying people in the streets of Dhaka in Bangladesh, in India. I've seen the human misery around the planet that's just horrific. I've been to Antarctica. I've seen what's happening to our climate, to our oceans, to the acidification of our oceans, you name it. And so that's why I care. And so I hope you care as much as I do. And if we all care enough, we can push this issue to the forefront, that we can make changes that are positive, and that we can really make a future that's sustainable for our children and all living creatures on the planet. And the fact is, we're all in this together. And I really hope that you have been enlightened and certainly educated today. And I'm thankful for Republic Magazine bringing this to America. And Earl, I thank you very much and the whole staff there. And let's march forward. Let's move forward in a positive way with a great sense of really Thomas Jefferson and George Washington and Susan B. Anthony and Dr. Martin Luther King and all your heroes to make the world a better place for all of us, and that we can become part of the family of nations that makes a difference here in the 21st century to help the whole human race move forward in a positive way and make this extraordinary adventure for all of us continue for our children. And I thank you so much, Earl.
Okay. Thank you, Frosty, very much, and thank you, everyone. And I hope to hear everyone on the webinar tomorrow. And with that, I wish everybody a great day and, of course, a happy new year here in these holidays. And we'll see everybody soon. Take care. Bye-bye.